Hi, this is Tanya Domi. Welcome to The Thought Project, recorded at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, fostering groundbreaking research and scholarship in the arts, social sciences, and sciences. In this space, we talk with faculty and doctoral students about the big thinking and big ideas generating cutting-edge research, informing New Yorkers and the world. This week's guest is David Bloomfield, Professor of Educational Leadership, Law, and Policy at Brooklyn College in the Graduate Center. Professor Bloomfield specializes in educational law, school district management, school reform, and legislative matters. Welcome, David, to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
David, you were just in Washington, D.C. for an anti-tax bill protest. Do we know how this tax bill is going to affect education in America?
We are beginning to understand, and it's not pretty. Ted Cruz, at the last minute, was able to get into the Senate bill the ability of parents to establish savings account, tax-free savings accounts for private school and even homeschool expenses, which will probably draw, if it's enacted, would drive a lot of families out of the public school system, which themselves would be denuded of funding because lack of federal funds on the one hand, and because of the way the bill treats property taxes, which is how education gets funded in America.
And this seems to be a tactic that really goes beyond charter schools now. Now this is a really big hit on public ed, is it not?
Exactly right. It helps the Betsy DeVos for-profit private school sector, which I think is a big winner here, as well as the traditional public private school system and homeschoolers. So this is war on public education, and as we've seen, that's true not only K through 12, but higher ed as well.
That's terrible news, I think. Speaking of Betsy DeVos, who's the U.S. Secretary of Education, you just published an op-ed in Education Week that's getting a lot of attention regarding her actions on deregulating, really, in essence, prohibitions of discrimination that have been regulated up until this point. Why don't you tell us about that?
I wrote an article a while back saying that Betsy DeVos's real power was the power to do nothing, and she's proving that that power is quite powerful. She is rescinding old guidance. Guidance is a kind of regulatory power that administrations have that don't have to go through Congress. They don't even have to go through regular administrative procedures. And by either not enforcing or rescinding the guidance, she's able to really give the folks who might do harm a free rein, and that is free rein about sexual assault. It's free rein for racial and ethnic discrimination. It means that we are in the Wild West of educational practice.
Yes, and she's representing the Trump effort to really roll back anything that Obama advanced, for example, on trans students in American schools, revoking the gender application of Title IX to protecting them from discrimination, and most recently, and very disturbingly, actually, her efforts to roll back on disabled students that's really under the aegis of, the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Not only the American with Disabilities Act, but with IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And this has always been a sore point. You might remember at her hearings, she didn't even seem to understand what IDEA required. And she said that private schools, going back to that issue, wouldn't have to enforce that law in terms of their own educational requirements. That means that private schools could simply not admit disabled students or not give them the proper appropriate services called for in the act.
It seems like a really stupid political move on behalf of the Republican Party. Disabilities doesn't discriminate in terms of party affiliation. So there's going to be Republican families that have disabled children that might be denied access to education as well. It's pretty sobering, actually.
What we see about this administration and this Congress is it's more like grab and go. They have the power now. They have the majority. They have the cabinet. And they're taking what they can for their particular constituency, which is more big business than it is Main Street. And so I don't think that they really care at this point. They can try to brand it any way they want. But people understand that in terms of healthcare, in terms of education, in terms of urban assistance, in terms of discrimination of all sorts, this is a libertarian crew who think that big business ought to have the right of way.
And speaking of private education and charter schools, right here in New York City, under the leadership of Eva Moskowitz, she's really advanced charter schools here. And now that this new politics in Washington, how do you think that will affect the charter school movement in New York City and actually in New York State itself?
I think there's going to be more funding for charter schools. Again, Eva and other charter school operators have this kind of shape-shifting approach when they want to be called public charter schools because they take public money. They configure themselves as part of a public school system, but as we know, they want to have free rein from the regulations, including IDEA and others, that restrict the ability of public schools to do whatever they want.
And charter schools, I mean, New York City, the schools fall under the mayor, and right now, there's a big standoff between the mayor and the governor on priorities in terms of education, probably. I'd like to hear your thoughts about really maybe how they differ. And actually, in that regard, does Governor Cuomo play a big role in shaping K-12 education in the state of New York? What's his record here, in your view?
I think that the battle between Cuomo and the mayor in general is a huge issue. In education, it actually has receded as Cuomo has his sights on the presidency and is moving somewhat leftward from where he was early in the administration. Early administration, he was really pushing charter schools hard. He was testing. He was pushing test-based accountability hard. Not so much anymore. And so I think we don't see the kind of divisions in education that we see in other areas of public policy. The governor has a great deal of power in two respects. One, he signs legislation, he proposes legislation, and he's been quite effective early in the administration at pushing those accountability measures through statute and through the budget process. More importantly, he really controls the amount of state aid that goes to districts and how much state aid goes to individual districts. And that's really the greatest power of the governor and the legislature. They really don't historically care about educational policy. They really care about how much money goes to every district in the state. It's called the runs, because that's how legislators are elected outside of New York City, which funds its education out of the general fund.
But coming back to New York City for a minute, seems like the mayor has done a good job on pre-K. That was a campaign promise he made and essentially delivered on. That is a standard that New York City prides itself on. It seems like he's really taken a lot of victory laps on pre-K. What's your view on that?
What healthcare is to Obama as the signature issue and progressive policy. That's what UPK, Universal Public Preschool Education, is for de Blasio. It's a generational innovation. It's extremely important, and he delivered not only in terms of the promise of quantity, but of quality. And we seem to have very good pre-K, and it's moving downward, which is extremely important, down to the three-year-olds. The most difficult part of the original plan was it was four-year-olds, and most middle or at least upper middle class families who can afford it are sending their kids to pre-K at two. But it's a great success, and he deserves all the accolades that he's received.
And speaking of the mayor, he appointed Carmen Farina to be the chancellor. There's some discussion out there in the media, or maybe rumors being reported, that she might retire. What do you think about that? And if she does retire, who's some of the top candidates that would take her place, in your view?
It's generally thought, except maybe by the chancellor herself, that she will retire soon. She had retired before she was appointed chancellor and came out of retirement to do this job, this very hard job, requiring a lot of energy, for now 4 years. Whether she stays or goes will not only be her decision, but the mayor's. If she goes, the thinking right now is that there's no heir apparent from within the system, and therefore it may be one of the big city superintendents who's out there, somebody from Baltimore, Boston, Los Angeles, probably not Chicago, which has its own problems with public education. But it's a question now of who it might be, and it's a free-for-all.
Interesting. But there are some big problems in New York City public schools. One, it's very segregated. It's considered one of the most racially segregated systems in the country. And talk to us about the renewal programs, the renewal education approach that this mayor has taken, and what's going on with the renewal schools.
The mayor was stuck with a problem when he came in, and this relates to the time when Cuomo was really pushing an accountability agenda. He had to name a certain number of failing schools. Those are the schools with low test scores. Bloomberg, before him, closed schools with low test scores. De Blasio ran against that policy because there was a lot of pushback, and so he developed an idea of renewal schools, particularly tied to community schools and social services provided by those schools. That's a long-term program of improvement, and he only really had about 3 years, and he promised 3 years of stark improvements, and he hasn't delivered on that. So that is an area of difficulty for the mayor. He was just reelected, so it's not particularly a voter issue, but he still struggles to show that he really can improve schools and not just close them.
New York City is, of course, one of the largest public school systems in the country. What do you think of where it stands as a model or not in the country? I'd say it has probably one of the most diverse student body populations in the country. It's the largest school system. How does it rank, in your view, compared to the bigger systems like LA, Chicago, for example?
We need to talk about money. New York is advantaged by its vast wealth, and so it has plenty of money for the schools. It has a huge upper middle class to draw on, and so the schools in New York City are different than many of the other much more segregated cities in the country. We do have a huge problem of segregation, and this goes back to the renewal schools. What de Blasio won't do, hasn't done, is to really attack the segregation that we have. It's income segregation, it's racial segregation, and he tends to concentrate the poor, the black, the brown in certain schools, and the wealthier and the whiter groups in other schools. We would have a much better school system if we would attack that problem, but politically, he just doesn't want to go there.
Interesting. So when you talk about the vast monetary resources of New York City. Now we're looking at this tax bill. This tax bill is proposing to not allow states like New York, where taxpayers can deduct their local and state taxes, cuts to schools, the proposal to give money to homeschools and charter schools, if you're saying is contained in this bill. We're at a crossroads, are we not, if this tax bill is passed? And, of course, we don't know all the details yet. I'm not even sure members of the House and Senate know the details. But where do you think we go from this point? I mean, you participated in a protest against the tax bill. There's a lot that really weighs in the balance when it comes to education, is there not?
There's plenty to worry about. New York City probably will fare better than most in some ways. We don't depend on the property tax so much, although the income tax is also part of this deduction issue. We have the financial industry that seems to be humming along. That provides a lot of income, which other cities don't have. I worry less about New York City than the rest of the country, but we will be hit hard, and we have to worry that there may be an economic downturn, which, coupled with the tax changes, would really hurt New York.
David Bloomfield, great to have you today. It was a really interesting conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning into The Thought Project, and thanks to our guest, Professor David Bloomfield. The Thought Project was produced in partnership with CUNY TV, located at the Graduate Center in the heart of New York City, with production, engineering, and technical assistance by Sarah Fishman and Jack Horowitz. I'm Tanya Domi. Tune in next week.